This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. It is Thursday morning. We're going to get to the burning platform, and Justice is not in this morning because he's on holiday. I think a well-earned holiday. The guy works pretty damn hard. So he's on holiday with his family, but he'll be back next week. And Polly van Wyk will be ably standing in for him in a short while. A couple of news things. So I heard a really nice tribute. We were talking about Barbara Bush, who died. I don't know how many people even remember Barbara Bush, but she was the wife of George H.W. Bush, and she died yesterday or the day before. And there was a very nice tribute, actually, given by George W. You want to know what he said? That's about his mom, and he had a couple of things to say. So let me tell you what he's up to, because we haven't heard from George W. in a long time. He's kept a very low profile
he's
since.
He's on his ranch.
Well, he's in his ranch in Crawford, Texas. And he laughed like that. I'm in my ranch in Texas. And she has. She's obviously the only woman in living memory, but not the only woman in history, to have had a son and a husband who was president of the United States. So George W. had a couple of comments about his mom. And I think this is a very sober and sensible way to deal, because you know, a lot of people get very upset about death. And she had a good innings. She had, you know, 92 years, I think. And so he had some things to say. Listen to this. Here he is talking about it. George W. Why is this not coming through now? Hang on a second. Let me just turn this up. Oh, for God's sake. I'm really good at. I promise you, I can use my phone properly. I've just got to figure out how. Let me see. George W.
I just appreciate moments like this for all the times that I get made fun of.
When you can't use your
phone?
When
I can't use my phone, or when I'm, you know, being technologically. Never mind.
Technologically dysfunctional. That one, that the one you're looking
yeah.
for?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I got him. George W.
For what took place? Particularly me.
All right, here we go. This is George.
You don't feel sorry for any of us. Particularly me. I am at peace with what took place. And the reason why is my mother was at peace for what took place. She believes in an afterlife and was joyously looking forward to that afterlife. She's pretty funny to the end. So I went over to see her in the hospital. Laura and I went over there. And she was her feisty self. One of the things that tended to enrich our conversations with her needling me and me needling her. And so she was needling me, and the doctor walks in. Nice, pleasant woman. And mother said to the doctor, "Do you want to know why George turned out the way he turned out?" And the doctor kind of looked, somewhat perplexed and nodded her head. And mother says, "Because I drank and smoked when I was pregnant with him." And so unlike a lot of people, I had the joy of speaking to Mom the day she died and the day before she died. And the day before she died, I said, "Mom, I just want you to know you've been a fabulous mother, and I love you dearly." And she said, "I want you to know that you're my favorite son on the phone."
Isn't that great?
I can hear her voice now. "George, move on with your life and continue to do the fabulous work you're doing at the Bush Center. Thank you all for being here."
Okay.
"God bless my mama."
There we go. Isn't that nice? I mean, that sounds so happy, and he's laughing, and he's joking about her and the time they spent together. I think that's quite cool. Like, if you can feel that way after your mother or father dies, you know you've had a full, good life.
Yeah, it's true, because these things should be sometimes celebrations rather than absolute sorrow.
It's like a relief sometimes for people. I know people who say that they're very excited about the prospect of death. They want to see what's on the other side. If there is anything on the other side, but they want to see. They're excited about that. All right, what's going on in the news, Mubs?
So, Sarko is a new machine that is causing all types of outrage.
Sarko?
Yeah, it's a euthanasia machine.
Oh.
And it has been built to assist people to kill themselves at the click of a button.
Hmm.
And it was unveiled at a funeral show in Amsterdam recently.
We've got a funeral show?
They have all types of shows.
Wow, can you imagine how depressing that show is?
The 3D printed machine invented by Philip Nitschke, who is an Australian doctor who has been advocating legalizing euthanasia, comes with a capsule and coffin.
Oh, okay. Once you buy the coffin at the same time, it's a package deal.
It would.
It's brilliant.
Once inside the capsule, clients can click a button and the canister of nitrogen inside will be released to fill the capsule.
Huh.
According to Nitschke, the person inside soon loses consciousness and then passes away. At the annual funeral expo in central Amsterdam, the model was displayed with a virtual reality headset that enabled visitors to feel what it was like to be inside.
Wow.
He planned to launch the machine, which would be 3D printed and assembled anywhere in the world in 2019. However, the device has triggered controversy over the morality and legal implications of committing suicide, of course. Pro-life organizations are warning that the machine could cause a huge spike in suicides.
So then let people. I mean, if you've decided it's time, then you should be able to use this.
Yeah, who are the people who are actually upset here?
Yeah, who wants to stop these people? You keep them alive for you?
It's a lot of people. It's people who get uncomfortable at the thought of suicide, for example.
I get uncomfortable at the thought of people deep frying everything. You know, it's,
okay. All
you
right.
I mean, you get to tell everybody to stop.
I get to tell them don't kick the wing out of their hand.
No, sure, but I mean, human beings. You know how human beings are. We love to think that we know better than the next person. We love to get onto pedestals and to preach all types of things because we feel that, you know, everybody should listen to me because I know best. It's a human flaw.
Yeah. Don't tell people
so
what to do.
It's no different here.
I think it's a great product. I would go this way.
Imagine you can.
Sounds amazing.
You can decide like Barbara Billingsberger Bush when she was ready to pull the trigger. You know, you can go in a dignified way. I don't know. Look, I have such mixed feelings about this because I know that there are also people who are struggling with mental illness and a whole lot of other things, and they might make an impulsive decision. And, you know, there's only one chance to make that decision, really. And if you change your mind, it's too late. You know, it's already, the process has started. So I do feel there needs to be a lot of thought that goes into this and a lot of consultation with experts, with people who have your interests at heart. But if you do decide, like it's time and you've had enough, who the hell's anyone else to stop you?
Sure.
It's nobody else's business but yours. You own your meat. You own your meat vehicle. You can do what you want with it. I don't see how anybody has a say. The government, religious organizations, your family, they don't have a say. It's your life. You're allowed to do what you want with it. Don't you think? I don't think there's a problem with that. And I know it's uncomfortable for some people, like my buddy said, and she's absolutely right. Some people are very uncomfortable talking about suicide and death and that kind of thing. And for some people, it's just too hard to bear and they're mortally afraid of it. But you've got to be aware of the fact that some people want a way out. So life is just too hard for some of them.
But it's quite a place to go to. You say it's a funeral fair.
Yeah, funeral show.
It
an expo.
It's a funeral show.
Wow.
Imagine that, like.
Suppose you have to wear black and you have to be all somber the whole time,
like
right?
You want to take your parents for a day out and they go, cool, where are we going? Well, Dad, we're taking you to the funeral fair.
Oh my God.
You're getting on and we need to make plans.
What do you think they have there? So they obviously have.
Well, there's definitely a medicinal marijuana enclosure.
You think so? There's one of those at every fair, isn't
it? Should be, yeah. You can vape with all kinds of different things.
Sure. Probably have books and coffins and all that kind of thing. Wow. What a show to go to. I wonder if they hand out antidepressants at the entrance. All right. What else do we want to go to? We've got Polly van Wyk coming up just now.
Well, we've got a woman who's been awarded $6.4 million US in a revenge porn case.
Ooh.
Yes. A federal district court in California last week entered a default judgment against a man, and they've ordered him to pay $6.4 million in damages after he was accused of spreading an ex-girlfriend's naked pictures and videos online.
Good. I hope this is a trademark for everybody. I mean, a precedent for everybody
else.
Yeah,
it's time. It's believed to be the second largest payout for a victim of revenge porn who was not a celebrity. The unnamed woman, who was listed as Jane Doe in legal filings, sued the man, David Ellum, in civil court. She alleged copyright infringement, online impersonation with intent to harm, stalking, and the intentional infliction of emotional distress. The case was first filed in 2014. It also underscores how complicated it can be to seek justice. There's no federal law against revenge porn, just a patchwork of state laws, and criminal cases are far and few between. So this judgment here is being seen as some kind of precedent, yes.
Yeah, if you put out pictures of someone or video of somebody who you were in a relationship with, and you don't have their permission, they should be able to sue the crap out of you. Revenge porn is terrible. It's very bad. I can't imagine how any of that will ever end well. So if you are thinking about doing something like that, you need to know that you could be sued. And you could end up spending the next 10 years of your life paying off that debt. Now, is that worth it? To get some revenge?
According to details of this this particular story, this woman's pictures ended up on all kinds of websites, with some of them refusing to remove the images, wow. Some of the websites agreeing to take them down as soon as the law got involved. But, you can imagine.
Have you ever forwarded porn, not revenge porn, but you forwarded a picture to someone that you got from someone else by mistake?
By mistake?
Like someone sent you something that's quite personal and you forwarded it to someone else by mistake?
No.
I've heard that happened.
No.
I've heard that's happened a lot. Where people get pictures of their girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, and then they forward them on without realizing that they forwarded them to the wrong people. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that
that's when you end up on those hockey groups.
That's what I was going to say.
What's his name?
Mariki or whoever.
That's whatever her name was. Poor woman.
Yeah.
And suddenly her naked pictures are all over the internet. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. And how many of us spread those pictures?
Oh.
Because that's what we do, right?
Oh.
You
I wouldn't recognize her now if she walked into this room, would you?
No. Well, I mean, if I remember correctly, it was literally just a picture of her...
lower half.
Her swimsuit region. No face, nothing. So we don't know what she looks like.
Her urat.
Yeah. I don't think people often go by urat. It's not like you got driver's license, please. Urat.
Interestingly enough, apparently monkeys and baboons recognize each other by their asses.
Do they smell each other there or what?
No, they recognize the shape of the ass. So
if
a baboon, and you know why?
Baboons.
Yeah, it's a particular kind of baboon. But you know why? Because if they're moving away from you, you need to still know who it is. And that way you can also follow the alpha male in the pack and that kind of thing. So baboons are good at recognizing the front and the back. If I showed you pictures of Sia, mine, and Ben's ass, would you know whose was whose?
Well, obviously.
Well, yes.
Would you? How? You're so clever. Tell me how. Huh? My vale moloi.
Okay. Even Ben said obviously.
Obvious.
Well, Sia and I look very different. Let's be completely fair here.
What are you saying about about Sia?
I'm of darker hair than you, Gareth, and you no doubt have self-tan on your bum.
Why would I have self-tan on my ass? Why would I have that? Makes you think that.
Oh, gosh.
So I think the three of us are a bad case study.
Okay. So let's say there were another two men here, and let's say one of them was quite similar looking to Sia and one of them was quite similar looking to me.
I think
would you be able to tell from behind?
Well, I mean, what are we talking about here? Are you guys butt?
This is actually probably more Sia's.
Are you guys butt naked or are you wearing underpants?
No, we've got nothing on.
This was going.
So there's a certain kind of baboon that can recognize what the other baboons look like exactly just from looking at their backsides, their asses.
Yeah, I think I would be
able to tell.
Yes.
I think
this is simple.
I think what's even more interesting is whether or not you'd be able to tell your partner's backside.
Yes, in a lineup.
That's a good question.
In a lineup, in a picture.
So, you know, there's actually a Japanese game show for this.
Yes.
I've been sent this over. What's it? This Japanese game show is like this, and then eventually some guys end up having sex with relatives and they don't know about it.
No, man.
Really?
Guys, it's not my show. Just telling you what's out there.
Wow.
And, you know, let's remove the benefit of things like birthmarks and obvious things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was using then.
Would you be able to tell if your partner was in a lineup of 10 other people, let's say of similar racial and weight and height categories, right?
Yeah, you've got to do it like that.
Yeah, because now we're going to test how well you'd be able to. How many times have you seen your partner naked from the front and the back? And would you be able to recognize them if we just blurred out everything from, let's say, the navel up? Would you figure it out? Both sides, front and back.
It's an interesting point. Like,
I wonder.
If you'd get it wrong. You'd obviously say yes because you'd back yourself. But I don't go to a lot of strip clubs. I don't hang out with, you know, Easter and sex parties or whatever. So I don't see a lot of naked people.
Don't sound so jealous, Ben.
Well, front is easy, though, to identify.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Look, front is obviously, I think, more distinctive than back. Again, who knows? This is uncharted territory for all of us here.
With guys and how it swings.
I think the penis area is quite distinctive.
True.
I don't think I'd...
You wouldn't be able to?
You wouldn't?
No.
See? I'm telling you, it's not as easy as you think.
It's an interesting conversation. Because we can't exactly go, well, on tomorrow's show, we have 10 guys.
I think we should. I think we should have a contest.
We're going to have 10 guys rolling here, just 10 random dongs. Yeah.
Let Mabale choose one, and then she must try and pick it out of the lineup again later.
Wow.
So basically what you're saying is she needs to know one person in this lineup.
Yeah.
And then you got to say, so, which one is?
Right.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
All right, it's time for the burning platform. Are we ready, Sia? Oh, okay. We're going to speak to Polly van Wyk. Polly's a well-known journalist. She's got an incredibly good reputation for reporting on stories that other people are either afraid to talk about. People don't necessarily have the sources that she has. She's very connected. She knows everybody, and she's broken so many news stories. It's not even... It doesn't befit an introduction for me to go through the minute details of what an incredible career she's had. And Polly's going to join us this morning for the burning platform. Justice Malala is on holiday. While we're getting her on the line, Mubs, back to you in the news. What else can you tell me?
Well, it's probably time for us to turn our attention to...
Please don't say Patricia DeLille and the DA.
No. To turn our attention to a new viral trend. You know, teenagers, they love trying new things. They'll set themselves on fire. They'll plank.
Are we talking about, planking? And what was the other one that was a big deal just a short while ago?
There were kids who were setting themselves on fire and filming themselves.
Mm. There was something else as well. Oh, Tide Pods.
Ah, yes. Thank you very much. Yes. Tide Pods. Okay.
Tide Pods.
So we've had a condom challenge before, but we've got a new one. The first one, I think it was about how you filled up a condom with a lot of water and then you would drop it on your head so that the condom falls on your head to wrap around your face. And I think there was a story about a kid dying from that because he suffocated, right?
Yes.
But don't get in the way of teenagers trying new things. So now we've got the condom snorting challenge, people.
Oh.
Yep.
I've heard about this
one. Yes, a viral trend that has been spreading across the internet. It's got teenagers stuffing condoms up their noses and then pulling them out of their mouths. It's called condom snorting. Yes, it's a real thing. And, you know, adults feel the need to come forward to remind the kids that it is really dangerous. Thousands of videos have surfaced on YouTube of people participating in this challenge. Basically, here's the lowdown of the condom snorting challenge. You stick this condom up your nose and then you pull it out your mouth. It's as simple as that.
Hmm.
They film themselves doing the entire thing.
It looks terrific, of course. It looked very sexy.
And then they post it on social media. What?
Yeah. How do you like them apples? This is what people are doing for fun. And we talk about, you know, there are some people in poor parts of the world that have nothing, and they're scrounging around in the ground for food. And what are the other millennials doing? They're busy snorting condoms through their nose. How's that? Huh?
I did see a funny tweet about this where somebody said, the problem here with these kids participating in the condom challenge is that a lot of their parents failed to use the condom. And this is why we end up with kids who do this.
Right. If they just used the condom.
If they just used condoms, we wouldn't have these issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the latest thing going viral on the internet. I don't know, man.
I wonder if, did we do stuff like this? I mean, there weren't internet viral things.
No, we didn't.
When we were kids. But what did we do?
What did we do, Ben?
We had fist fights and we, I don't know, played marbles.
Yeah,
marbles, I remember. I don't know, fist fights. I didn't really get into those.
Sure. Yeah, we played all kinds of things. We were jumping rope. We were doing hopscotch thingies. We were, yeah, no, nothing that necessarily put our health.
Did you do hopscotch?
Oh, dude. I was a champ.
We used to play this game called Stingers at school.
Yeah, that was good.
Remember Stingers? That was fun.
Yeah, how does that work?
Okay, it was like the best thing to do during break time. So all the guys would get together. Sometimes the girls would join in. That was fun. But we always used to then victimize the poor girls because they wouldn't expect it. So you would take a tennis ball and you would all play on one of the fields, the rugby field, the cricket field, whatever. But you had the whole field to run around on. And then if someone managed to hit you with the ball, so they'd throw it at you as hard as they can.
Oh.
If it hits you, then you're the one with the ball. Then you have to try and hit someone else.
Oh, okay.
God, I used to love that game.
You know what we did as girls? With the tennis ball, you would have two girls, one on opposite side of each other. Mm-hmm. And then they bounce the tennis ball onto the ground so that the next girl catches it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a third girl in the middle of the tennis
Piggy
ball.
In the middle.
She's ducking the tennis ball, but the aim is to like hit her with it and knock her out.
You girls are so soft.
Stingers was hectic. Sometimes you'd play with a cricket ball instead of a
you didn't.
Tennis ball.
Don't
what?
Lie.
Oh, yes.
Don't lie, Cliff.
During, if we
with
were
a,
doing
with a cricket ball.
Well, okay. One of those, one of those red slazzers.
Slazz ball. Very different.
Right.
Jeepers, try sound hardcore. It's like a fishing tail gone wrong. Cricket ball would kill some child.
And there were probably children who died.
Then Philip died.
Ben,
but you know, it was
there are kids
game.
Dying of the condom challenge. There would have been kids dying of the slazz ball challenge. Trust me.
We used to play Red Rover. That was also a good one.
What was that?
So you would have one guy then call someone over, normally the small kid. So all the kids would line up on the one end of the field, and you would say, I called, I don't know, Jeff over. Jeff running with his asthma pump and inhaler. We just tackle the crap out of him.
Shame.
And as he basically suffers with, like, I don't know, spinal bifida for the rest of his life, other kids will run over, and whoever gets tackled has to then become the tackler.
Oh god.
So you get to a stage where literally you get one kid left and there's like 10 people trying to tackle him.
Not
Jeff, of course. At this stage Jeff has been dug up, put into the ground.
That's horrible.
Yeah, kids died. Collarbones were broken.
Oh yeah, it was rough. Now I suppose the condom challenge is safer. All right, let's turn our attention to the news stories of the week and the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Every week we manage to get a decent breakdown, an analysis, a summary of the big stories of the week. And this morning we're thrilled to be joined by Polly van Wyk, journalist of great and well-known renown and repute. Polly, it's a pleasure to speak to you. I'm sorry we were struggling so hard to get hold of you for the last couple of minutes, but you're here now. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Cool. Well, we haven't spoken to you in a while, and there's a lot that's happened, a lot of water under the bridge. You've been breaking stories left, right, and center. But let's, if you don't mind, start off this week with a discussion around Busisiwe Mkhwebane. What's going on with her at the moment? First of all, I think, you know, she was caught between a rock and a hard place when she was first appointed. And obviously the administration, her boss, the president, has changed. And a lot about what the cases are that she might have been, I don't know, particularly keen on before might have moved down the priority list. And some of the things that were not important to her before are now suddenly very important. But she's also got issues with her security, right?
Yeah, how interesting is that situation? But the woman keeps on making very strange decisions. The last time that you and I spoke, we also spoke about her and the strange decisions she made in her office. Mm. Now, this time, huge alarm bells are ringing because she involved the state security agency in the day-to-day operation of the Office of the Public Protector. Now, the state security agency are those guys who we call the spooks. And I'm sorry to say so, but traditionally in this country, they were always there to protect the president rather than to actually live out their mandate and to protect the country and, mm-hmm. and the people inside of the country. Exactly what their name says, they're supposed to guard and to shield us from all sort of threats from outside and obviously from inside. Now, what Pusi Siwe, who has a state security agency background, what she has done is that her security manager is currently being trained by the state security agency in the classification of information. Now, that is a bigger problem than I can actually describe almost to you. This is something that cannot be overemphasized. The public protector is an institution that should be totally apart and totally impartial from any government institution in South Africa.
Yeah, in fact, her job there is to almost review government and to occasionally check in on them and be able to prosecute where necessary.
Yeah, exactly. So an example that I can give there is how she... the public protector office before her via Tuli Maronsela in the end got information, very secret and classified information about Trillian and about the Guptas and about how the Guptas ran or initiated or wanted to run Treasury. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for Tuli Maronsela at the time, we wouldn't have known about all of this.
Yeah.
So the problem that we have now is that she's bringing in state security and she's opening a channel for state security. You will obviously not keep quiet and keep silent when there's such confidential and such very important information inside the public protector's office that can hurt the state.
But Polly, does this mean that the state security agency has insight into things that are going on at the public protector's office that they should not? Or does it mean that Pusi Siwe Mkhwebane has information that she should not have from the state security agency?
No, it would be the other way around. Yeah. So Pusi has information about the working of state security. She knows how state security works because she's worked there. But when she's bringing in people and getting a security manager to be trained by the SSA, you know, we are unfortunately in a space where the state security makes use of double agents. Mm-hmm. And if they, for example, convert that security manager into an agent who continuously feeds them with classified information, right, we will definitely have a breach of information from our office. And our office works with very, very sensitive information.
And sources, which you as a journalist know all about. So sometimes someone will whistleblow to the public protector, and if the state security agency knows about that person, they could unfairly target that person.
Absolutely. That's such a good point to make, because these people have information that might harm individuals in the state, and most definitely they will be targeted. And we know that even our country, as free as the media are, we don't have an amazing sort of whistleblower program or people that keep our whistleblowers safe.
Like they have the witness protection program in other countries.
Yeah. Here it sort of fails. We have a protection program, a witness protection program, but it's also one run by the state. Mm. And you want to keep, with every case that the public protector is involved in, you would want to keep the people totally apart from the state, and the whistleblowers you would want to keep totally apart from the state.
Well, since it's often the state they're ratting on. But let's talk about some other things, because I mean, poor Pusi Siwe Mkhwebane. Do you think she's going to last in office? I mean, before we move on to something else, you don't think she's going to be there for a long time?
No, she shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, really, Tuli Maronsela. Everybody talks about how great Tuli Maronsela was, but it's incredible how bad Pusi Siwe Mkhwebane is by comparison. And even if there wasn't a Tuli before, we would still be saying Pusi Siwe Mkhwebane is no good at her job.
Yeah, definitely. Just if we analyze the legal decisions that she made, it's sort of as if she has this goal and she just wants to get to that goal. So she sort of microwaves all her decisions until it's right and where she wants it. And then she just go for what she wants. And that doesn't work. I don't have to tell you that doesn't work like that in law. You have to have a causal sort of argument of how you're going to make this work, or how you're going to get to your decision, or how you are going to write this report. You cannot just decide on what goal or what you want and then you just go for it. So that, for an example, how she handled the APSA PsyX report was just atrocious. And I've never in my life seen, still to this day, a person who got such a stringent court judgment against them, saying that they really shouldn't be in their job.
And she had to apologize about her comments about the Reserve Bank and a bunch of other real missteps that just show that she's very amateurish at doing what she's meant to be doing. Okay, let's turn our attention to the Northwest, because the once all-powerful Premier League seems to be disintegrating. I mean, David Makura, for what it's worth, is now our deputy president. But Ace Magashule is battling for his life in the Free State. There are all kinds of charges that are being drummed up against him at the moment. And there are all kinds of people coming forward with evidence, the Stena Dairy Farm case and everything else. But the third member of the Premier League, Super Mahumapelo, has also got a basket full of problems.
Yeah, he does. So maybe one of the biggest problems at the moment would be a political one, where no confidence vote is about to be initiated against him. And the EFF this week went to court saying that they actually want that vote of no confidence in secret. So they are asking for a secret ballot, and their request was shot down. And then they said, okay, well, then we're going to court. Mm. And we're going to tell the court that there's already a precedent set. And you'll remember the president in President Jacob Zuma, former President Jacob Zuma's case, where there was also a secret ballot in parliament. So there's already a precedent set for the legislature for a vote against Supra. So that's on the one hand. Politically that might not work. He might live through it. Whether it will happen for the second and the third time is not so sure, because the politics change so quickly. And as you rightly said, his biggest backer at the moment would be Ace, sitting in the top six and guarding this unholy triad almost of the Premier League. And Ace would be his biggest backer in terms of political, in political terms.
Right.
So, and at the moment, he will be fighting for his life also in terms of the things that he's done. The Danel debacle just came out. His son has got a 1 million rand sort of a grant to go to flying school, which is also a big problem, especially in today where we're sitting with a president who actively says we cannot afford a corruption anymore. This cannot happen anymore. So yeah, the Premier League will definitely have a problem living through a series of events. But I think in the moment, Supra might still live through this first vote of no confidence.
Well, of course, his knee-jerk reaction has been to claim that ANC members are threatening the unity and the stability of the organization. You know, it seems that whenever a bad person is found to have been bad and people start turning their backs on them because they no longer want to be associated with them, the person in question starts saying, uh-oh, what about unity? What about the party? What about us all working together? Mm. What about collective responsibility? And that seems to be what Supra is doing in a moment of desperation.
Yeah, exactly. So it also shows us that they've never developed in their political arguments, you know. So it was always a matter of we're the top dog and we can do what we want. But the moment they are challenged, the moment when they are said to be, you know, confronted with a problem that they've not encountered before, or a problem of being ousted in terms of their power or their position, mm-hmm. then the only fallback that they have is that someone has an agenda. Right. Against me, the media is being ugly with me, and mm-hmm. There's a political faction against me. You know, they'll never. And on the other hand, one can understand that, because what does What will Supra tell us, you know, of why he shouldn't be removed? He can't fall back to his unblemished credentials because, I mean, the latest scandal of Denel just came at the very awkward moment. He can't fall back on an amazingly well-run province. I mean, the Northwest has been experiencing problems and instability since forever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been political killings. The factions, even the ANC factions inside the Northwest has fought each other, with chairs and candelabras and things. So, Supra doesn't have anything to fall back on in terms of political coinage and how he can say, no, but I actually did well for this province. I mean, the roads actually attest to that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Polly, while we're in the West, the Northwest, Julius Malema, there are threats against his life, and suddenly the EFF are beefing up security around him, and it seems that the threats are mostly coming from the Northwest. Is this credible?
Well, it's difficult to say, you know, from the outside. They've reported the matter to Police Minister Becky Telling, and they said that there's a threat on Malema's life, and they also beefed up his security for the entire leadership after they received this information for an alleged plot to kill their leader. But so let's analyze that. On the one hand, we know that Julius Malema recently gained this name for actually having the best information in the country. He's been breaking stories and files left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. It's also, on the other hand, in a very political, unstable time, especially for the poor people like the EFF and the DA. I mean, the ANC took away their best weapon. They took away Jacob Zuma, and they gave us Cyril Ramaphosa. Everyone loved So Ramaphosa, and I think the EFF and the DA is sort of a bit on edge, you know. So if there are these threats, and if they can prove some or other plot that the ANC has cooked up against them, you know, it might go some way to help them towards the road of 2019. We've certainly had no actual proof of anything against his life. But we also know that we live in a volatile country, so it might be so. I mean, President Cyril Ramaphosa's bodyguard the other day got hijacked in a car. Fortunately not with Cyril in it, but...
Yeah, we would have heard about that.
So all of these threats, all of these threats, one should always...
I'm curious because what you seem to be intimating is that sometimes politicians make the threat seem greater than it is in order to gain themselves some kind of currency, some kind of notoriety. They try to obviously garner some support or even sympathy from people. And we've heard of this before. I mean, a lot of times when Jacob Zuma was confronted with anything, he'd say there was a poison plot against him. There were people trying to kill him. In many cases, that may have been true, even within his own household. But often, these things are a distraction from the real story.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's been used, I think, mostly to garner some support and saying, you know, I've been doing good work. There are people that want to get rid of me. If you vote for us and if you make us a bigger party of you, or if you let us win, we will obviously govern better, and the opposition is clearly on edge because of that, and that's why they're threatening us.
Do you think that the EFF have a chance to gain a lot more representation in the Northwest? Do you think there are even municipalities that they could end up running outright?
I think they'll struggle. For example, what happened in the Eastern Cape, Nelson Mandela Bay, when they wanted to get rid of Athol Trollope.
Yes.
You know, that really blew up in their faces. And it showed that they actually aren't so important in terms of the political landscape, that they aren't so influential, that they make loud noises, yes, and that they what they do very well is to set the agenda in terms of what we debate, like the land reform question and like a white major in Nelson Mandela Bay. So that they do very well, but actually change things is You know, they don't have the political power at the moment. And when they fail and they don't have, you know, they're not successful in and careful in the agendas that they set and the project that they initiate, they will not garner more support. No, I don't think so.
All right. While we're talking about opposition parties, and you mentioned Athol Trollope, I see Natasha Mazzoni has been elected in the DA. To what has she been elected to?
Yeah, how interesting is that? And there was a massive problem with Mazzoni being elected. She was elected to one of the governing bodies of the DA. So they're taking that to court at the moment.
Who's taking it to court? It's a bit of a non-story. Who's going to court? Morning. Is she going to court or is someone else?
Well, there was some advice that the DA got that they said, you know, we might want to take the election to court. So it seems as if there's an internal DA fight within themselves that they would want to, would want to take the Mazzoni election to court. Because we know that the DA at the moment have their own problems. There's some faction that says that Musi Maimane has been in office way too long, and that he has not made the change, or he didn't bring change as he should have. So when Mazzoni was elected as this sort of a second deputy chairperson of the Federal Council, it was seen sort of as a second position created for her on the one hand, and then the rest of the DA would say no, it was just a position created because it was necessary. But yeah, it's one of those DA in-fight things that we'll see how it pans out. And what is important there is what happens with that appointment is that we'll see which faction in the DA is the strongest, and that would be interesting to see.
Now, Natasha Mazzoni is obviously also in the news fairly often because she did a lot of really hard questioning during some of those portfolio committees in Parliament, particularly when it came to things like the SABC and ESCOM and SAA. So she's obviously carving out a niche for herself too.
Yeah, most definitely. And give it to her. She did excellent work. And I think that might be one of the reasons why she was elected to the second deputy chairperson position. She gained notoriety when she, you know, in terms of the poor people that had to go and testify. She was like a bulldog that just didn't let go. She asked hard questions of people like Anoush Singh and Brian Molefe and Lynn Brown. And she, between her and Pravin Gordhan and some of the EFF MPs, they really had a hard time. So they did really good work. She's carving out a name for herself as a sort of a tough politician. And it might actually, you know, just on the face of it might actually be a very good appointment. But we'll have to see how the DA and the internal DA politics play out.
Okay. All right. Polly, one other quick thing. What's happened in the aftermath of the Winnie Madikizela Mandela funeral? I heard people getting euphoric about ANC EFF reunion. I heard people talking about how this is some seminal moment in ANC policy moving forward, not just ANC policy, but kind of taking stock of their own history, giving credit for certain struggle activities where it's due. Do you think this was a seminal moment, and has anything really significant happened since the funeral, or was there just a lot of chest beating?
I think it's a lot of hot air, and maybe it's one of those themes of debate that is necessary, but it's not necessarily going to change anything. Adding to all this...
Afraid that line's got particularly horrible, so I'm going to let Polly go. There's Polly van Wyk, the burning platform this morning. Brought to you by Nando's. We don't want the line to get worse. And we started so well, Mabs. Huh?
Yeah, well, you know.
It's deteriorated. Sia, please say thank you to Polly. It's always nice to talk to her. There she is. In case you don't know anything about Polly, you need to go and follow her on Twitter. She's really good. Journalist with the Daily Mavericks investigative team, Scorpio. She's also a former journalist at The Mail and Guardian and Media 24. And she's a fellow of Amabungane and someone who really does have a lot of sources in the news media and knows her stuff. So pay attention to Polly van Wyk and you won't be sorry. There she is, the burning platform. It's brought to you every Thursday by Nando's. Justice Malala is usually in the hot seat, and this week Polly very capably stood in for him, and we'll hopefully chat to her again soon in the future. Just that line got particularly ugly. Coming up, a little bit of news. Udo Karls is going to drop by. We'll say hi to him. Take your thoughts and calls, your WhatsApps, your messages on Telegram. It all comes to the same number, 079-748-2090. Get in there. All right. Spongile in the back room there, like she likes this song. Offenbach versus Nick Waterhouse. Catchy. She give me catchy. Happy morning. It's Thursday. Can you believe it's almost the end of the week already? Feels like just a moment ago we started this week, yes. And things are going to get significantly busier as we head towards the middle of the year where there are no public holidays. There's that one coming up at the end of this month.
Freedom.
Freedom Day, and then there's Weka's Day on Monday the 1st, and then
Tuesday the 1st,
sorry.
So you know everyone's going to take the Monday off.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, just
we'll be here, though. And then on June 16th is the only one, and then it's all the way to September that we have to stretch through.
August.
Wait, but guys.
Oh, there's Women's Day.
June, July. No, nothing in July. August.
No, nothing
in
August.
Women's Day.
Oh.
What?
My computer just shut down.
What did it do?
It just shut itself down.
Just killed itself?
Yeah.
Were you updating software or something?
No, I was, lining up some stories, but...
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Oh, no. That's terrible, my buddy.
Yeah.
We laugh, but it's not funny.
No, it's annoying. Why do these things always happen to me?
Well...
Where things just die in my hands.
Why does this happen to me?
They just die in my hands.
Oh, here's something interesting. First of all, this is an email that someone sent me. Gary sent me. He says, I was listening to your interview with Karen Morn the other day. I was reminded of this Cat Williams bit on Oscar Pistorius. I thought you might enjoy this. So this is from Gary, and then he sent me this clip, and this is Cat Williams, a comedian. Take a listen to this quickly.
It's a white boy that ran track for a motherfucking living. He ran track for a motherfucking living, and he lost both his motherfucking legs. Now, I hate losers and quitters, but I feel like if you run for a motherfucking living and you lose both of your motherfucking legs, you should be allowed to sit this motherfucker out. You have done everything there was for you to do. And this motherfucker on some gangster shit decide not only is he gonna walk again, he decide he gonna fucking race again. Now, you got to be in tune with your fucking star player to pull this shit off, because they made him some aluminum racing legs and shit look like bent back paper clips and shit. Yes. Don't try to act like something wrong with me. Some of you motherfuckers saw the story. You know what the fuck I'm talking about. It looked like bent back paper clips, like two baby boomerangs and shit. That's what he had to run on. That motherfucker had to be in tune with his star fucking player, because sometimes motherfuckers ain't gonna have your back like you think you should. And this motherfucker now gotta come in on his aluminum racing legs and race again. And he gotta try to come in and be all calm and smooth and not draw too much attention to himself.
So obviously he also didn't know a huge amount about the story, but that's hilarious. Bent back paper clips. Hilarious.
Cat Williams.
He's good. All right.
Someone who puts motherfucker after every third
single line.
And it just sounds so appropriate coming out of his mouth in particular.
Ben sent me a video of the rudest waitress in the world. She comes up to your table and she pretty much makes a job of insulting you and your whole family while you're placing your order. And people go there and they just love it.
Oh, so it's a thing.
It's her thing.
For some people, it's not expected, but sometimes you get people who just play along. But it's very much her thing.
She's terrific. So she's even been on talk shows. Her name is Cherry.
As the rude waitress.
Yeah, well, she's become well known.
The rudest waitress in the world.
Right, and the place that she works is Ed Debevchik's. It's like a restaurant in Chicago, and here she is taking an order. Just listen to this. She goes straight out of the starting blocks with this table that's a family of people, and she just starts insulting them all, taking their order.
I'd like a Diet Coke.
I'd love to get you one, and we'll shut you up. What do you want?
Can I get some pizza?
You're like 35. The kids' menu is 8 and under.
Okay.
You should have something on the adult menu.
Oh my god. Do I look like I'm in charge of anything? Alright, that's fine. You know what? Fine. You want to cheap out? That's cool. What are you drinking? What are you drinking? What are you drinking? What are you drinking? Your lemonade is going to be this big because you're ordering off the kids menu and I'm not refilling it for you. What do you want? What? Weird. Off the regular menu or the baby menu? All right, enjoy your ridiculously tiny hamburger. What are you drinking? Whatever. You. What? Great. Drink. Cheap. You. What are you getting? Off the baby menu?
Sure.
No, it's fine. Let's save you money so you can figure out how to leave me a decent tip, okay? Because right now I have no prayer at all.
So far, you're not earning one.
You know what, Grandpa? If I was nice to you, I'd get canned, okay? If you want good service, you go somewhere else. I know Hooters is probably more your speed, but you came here on purpose.
I hope the food's better than
you
the
used
service.
That line already, and it wasn't funny before.
What? Well, you didn't
what are you drinking?
Soda.
A little more specific, genius. Great. Dad, what do you want?
Taco platter.
Tacos? You want water. Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
And toilet water for you. Anything for the little
toilet water for you. She's hardcore, this girl.
No, I don't know why people enjoy it.
Wouldn't you like it?
No. Imagine if waiters were not required to be polite.
Yes.
That's what they
because
be like.
Because waiters put up with a lot.
Absolutely.
From us. Mm-hmm. A lot.
You know.
But they are forced to be cordial with us. It's part of the job description.
They want to get a decent tip.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's because...
So people are a real pain in the ass when they go to these restaurants.
People are so annoying.
Jesus. They come in. Those people, you know those ones who order the whole... They order a steak and then they eat 3/4 of it and they send back the last quarter and they're like, this is underdone. You're like, well, why did you eat 3/4 of it, you monster?
And people are rude.
Yeah.
Ugh.
No, wait, I wouldn't
I'm
like
sorry.
This.
I'm sorry. My salad's a bit soggy.
You're like, oh, really?
I've been sitting here for 15 minutes. Can I get some service, please?
Hold on. So you guys
like
have never
in that,
complained?
In that exact moment, that's when I'd like to like just like throw something in your face. But that's just me.
I think it's just about how you complain. If it's just and you're nice about it, I think like waiters shouldn't mind that because that's part and parcel of their job.
Look, it's still a
I don't know.
Very tough job.
I would be a terrible waiter.
Yeah.
I've never ever been able to deal with those things, and I don't believe the customer's king or any of that stuff.
No,
I would be like this waitress.
Customer's annoying as all hell.
You and I would be like this waitress. We'd be like her.
Not a chance.
We'd tell people get screwed. Listen to how she. Listen, she's not even finished.
No, she's
going to
eat scraps.
Great. That's a big waste of space. What do you want?
I have a three-way bowl of chili.
Actually, I have spaghetti.
Is that all you're eating?
Yeah, the strawberry shake.
Three-way bowl, heartburn, strawberry shake. All right, pass all the grown-up menus down. What?
Spaghetti.
Do I have spaghetti? Did you see it anywhere on the menu?
I didn't even look. I'm
yeah, that's because we don't have it, okay? You're at a place that gives out paper hats. You want spaghetti? Go to an Italian restaurant, okay?
Well, you have some pizza.
Yeah, that's because we get it from Gino's because we own the building.
And then she walks away. And if you complain after that, they just chase you out of the restaurant. It's a restaurant where you actually go to be insulted, really, to be treated. I think it's just terrific.
Oh, no. Every restaurant, like yeah. There's so many themed restaurants. Why can't it be? Well, this be it?
Yeah, theme. That's it.
Here's what she said on a talk show. She went on a TV talk show and spoke about this video that we've just played, you know, going viral. She spoke about, you know, how it all happens. She's on You and Me This Morning.
Ooh.
On WCIU in Chicago.
Snark is actually in her job description. Up next, we're talking to the Ed DeBevick waitress whose rudeness has gone viral. Don't go away. You and Me is back after this.
My girl Cherry. My girl Cherry.
All right, so this is these morning shows.
30 years, Ed DeBevick has been serving up a side of sass with all of their entrees. And this week, one of their servers, her name is Cherry, went viral when a family recorded their interaction. Now, I actually got the chance to talk with her all about the attention, so let's take a look.
I'd like a Diet Coke.
I'd love to get you one, but I'll shut you up. What do you want?
Can I get some pizza?
You're like 35. The kids' menu is 8 and under.
You should have something on the adult menu.
Oh, my God. Do I look like I'm in charge of anything? All right, that's fine. You know what? Fine. You want to cheap out? That's cool. What are you drinking? What are you drinking? What are you drinking? What are you drinking? Your lemonade is going to be this big because... Okay, I'm totally in love with her. I laughed the first time, I laughed the second time, I laughed the third time. That's how you know somebody is talented. This is Chrissy Ridolfi. She's also known as Cherry. She's my new best friend, and she's here to chat all about her newfound fame. Okay, Chrissy, you are so funny.
Charmer.
Let's start. Do you do stand-up comedy? Like, what's your... How were the one-liners coming out like that, sister?
It's 11 years of waiting tables and having pent-up rage. I worked retail before that, so it's... There's a lot of ammunition there.
Okay, so how long have you been at Ed DeBevick's? Because I guess when you get to work at Ed DeBevick's, that's when, like you said, you're able to say everything that's clearly on your mind.
Ed's was actually something that I picked out when I was having a rotten day at my retail job.
Uh-huh.
I worked at 8 a.m. that morning, and by 8:30, I had faxed in my application to Ed's because I was just done with it. And it's been 11 years. I started when I was 19, I've given them 11 years. It was supposed to be a summer job.
You're kidding. But yeah, you're here. Listen, Cherry, you're so good at it. Okay, so we were debating. I feel personally that family totally had a great sense of humor and they were in on it. But there were other people like, oh, they look offended. So what was the deal? They were happy, right?
They were a total party. They came in and there was a group. They were probably a group of like 10 or 12. There's a lot of them. So the minute they sat down, I was like, how many of you are there? I don't want to do this. And they were right back at me. They're like, buckle up, Cherry. It's going to be a ride.
Uh-huh.
I was like, okay, I'll play this game. Right. And it just right out of the gate and it just whirlwind. And by the time they left, they even had an issue with their food. And I didn't know that it was for real for a second until
you're kidding.
Oh, one of the guys pulled me aside and we were like, no, fourth wall for a second. There's actually like the kitchen messed up. I didn't. I never mess up. I'm perfect at everything. But I had to fix that for them. But they were even cool about that. They were a dream.
Wow. I mean, this is a place you go to be treated badly. I love it. Some people are masochists.
If I want to still be treated badly, I'd stay at home with my sisters. No thanks. I go out as a sense of refuge.
But with all the love in the world, I know why Sia's standing up for the customers here, because he's one of those problem customers.
Yeah.
We know this. Yes, it's true.
You're a difficult customer.
Jesus.
Difficult is not a bad thing. Sia, I'll agree. I may be challenging
some people. The menu is not a guideline.
But I'm nice. I'm always very nice.
No, always nice. And that's fine.
I'm never rude.
But I'm just saying, like, you are a lot of work as well.
No, I don't think so. If you have a pen and paper and you just write it down as I specifically ordered,
take our word for it. Everything's complicated with you. There is, you see the menu as a suggestion. It's like a bring and change and adapt. And it's very modular to you.
But I mean, if there's a salad with
something
there and a burger with something else there, of course I can just swap it around.
No, you can't.
Yeah. You make the same thing. Is it my fault that I want a salad and chips?
Do you know how the business of running a restaurant works?
The customer's orders, right?
No, they order a certain amount of stuff depending on how many of a certain dish they sell. That's how they keep stock of things.
Okay.
That's how they always have what you need. And if you are swapping and chopping and changing, and let's say you want the chicken, but you also want this from that dish, and you want that from the other, then you're mixing up their stock. They're going to lose money on – they hate customers like you.
Then tell me straight up to my face, but you never. You just
– Sia, there's never been a restaurant where you've just ordered straight off the menu as it is. Ever. Has there? Ever? Ever. I hate people like you at a restaurant. I look at the menu, I go, a number 45. They go, huh? Really? Just that? As is? I go, yeah, as is. Would you like it rare, medium, rare, well done? I go, well, medium. It's what most people take, right? Yeah, that's the one. No problem.
My drink orders are pretty simple. That's fine.
No, but you've never ordered a meal and just ordered it as is on the menu.
Mm-mm.
Never. Why
not
is that? Is this a thing where you need attention?
No, it's just my food preferences. I'm just very particular with my food. And when I go and I pay for something and they allow it and they're fine with it, it just works out.
You're a nutcase. You're a complete nutcase.
As long as no one spits in my food, then I'm good and happy for the time being.
If I worked in a restaurant and Sia Sangweni pitched up, I'd quit there and then on the spot.
I'm such a nice person.
All right, coming up, Udo Karlse. We're going to talk to him. An incredible career. We actually worked together a long time, and he's been at YFM as news editor. He's been he was a South African sports journalist finalist in 2014. He took on the sports slot at Metro FM from Robert Marawa from August 2017 until March of this year. The Ultimate Sports Show with Mpo Maboyi, that's on from 6 to 7:30 p.m. And then he's also recently won an award for Best Sports Show in the commercial category. Currently assigned on hosting special projects for SABC Sports since the radio reshuffling in March 2018. And we're going to talk to Udo and find out what he's up to. Get some specifics on that. Catch up with the guy. Haven't seen him in a long time. All right, here's what you need to know. Buckingham Palace has begun selling all kinds of royal wedding merch. They look set to make millions off of commemorative tea towels, snow globes, and Harry and Meghan stuff. T-shirts, can you imagine? Meghan Markle's dad thinks this is a good bandwagon to jump on and will be selling special items of his own. He's starting with a signed photo of his balls and pirated copies of Air Supply's All Out of Love, which was the song he conceived Meghan to. Not great. Then erectile dysfunction is on the rise across the UK, so much so that major supermarket chains are now selling Viagra. To capitalize on this, Skittles are now producing packets of Just Blue Sweets so kids can pop pills as often as their dads do, as a sign of solidarity with their dads' lib pricks. And finally, boxer Saul Alvarez has failed two drug tests, ruining the chances of his rematch with Golovkin. He is claiming innocence, however, saying tainted meat was to blame. Lance Armstrong was quick to come to his defense, saying he once ate some strange meat in France over a seven-year period with equally terrible outcomes. So, of course, we believe both of them. All right, coming up, Udo Karlse. Stick around for that. And get ready for a big day on cliffcentral.com, including The Unview, which is on the way. Lots of other good stuff to come. Udo Karlse, next. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very good. There was something else I was meant to tell you about, wasn't there? Oh, our earphones. I don't want to leave before I get into this, and we don't want to go to Udo before we've told you about our earphones. If you haven't seen them already, the Cliff Central unwired earphones, lots of people buying them, lots of people loving them. You can find them on cliffcentral.com, but you can also go to takealot.com. They're only 550 Rand. You will find them there. They can keep going for 10 hours. They've got battery life that lasts 10 hours. They've got a built-in microphone. They've got three button controllers, an ergonomic design that does not fall out of your ears when you're running. Plus, brilliant sound and build quality. It's exactly what you want. Then, of course, there's the pouch, which is terrific. You get that as a gift in there as well. Beautiful packaging and a little booklet that explains how it all works. It can connect to any laptop, any tablet, any phone by Bluetooth. And once you've got them around your neck, you can clip them together too. They've got little magnets at the back so that it switches off, saves battery power, and it's like a fashion accessory. That's what Ben uses them for.
Yeah,
get some attention. Mm. So go and check out our Cliff Central unwired earphones, and you can get them at takealot.com. Go and check out takealot.com, either on their app or on the web. The nicest thing about that is you don't have to leave home. You don't have to leave the office. They will deliver them to wherever you are. You can even get them sometimes the next day. It's incredible. Do it just to check out that thrill of having something delivered to your office, and everybody else in the office goes, ooh, you got a package. Open it up in front of them. It's terrific. Udo Karlse next.
This is CliffCentral.com.